This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
And we're live. Bismillah, alhamdulillah, salatu wassalamu ala rasulillah wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Welcoming everybody back to Behind the Minbar, Blueprints for a Better Masjid, where inshallah we level up one episode at a time. And somehow, some way, I got Rami Qawwas in the chair. Welcome, Rami.
Pleasure.
Rami is my guy. We share a stomping ground back in the Mass Youth Center. We came to the masjid scene as consumers.
Yeah.
We drank the Kool-Aid together, and we can't stop thanking Allah Azza wa Jal for that beautiful brotherhood. And Rami has since, mashallah, really carved the place for himself where I struggle to just call him Rami anymore. Big bro Rami, mashallah, has trekked a path in leadership, development, human resource management, even stretched himself, and may Allah reward him and his family, to really bonify these things through his studies at Harvard, and now you serve at Oak Tree. And so tell us a little bit about that, how you got here, what you're doing, and what Oak Tree's about.
Sure.
Because they need to know.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Bismillah, alhamdulillah. So first and foremost, love the initiative. May Allah reward you, Muhammad. And it's this is, I think it's these little new venues of how we can change an ummah, change a community. I think taking all the means that we can. So I love the, fell in love with the initiative when I first saw it launched. So may Allah reward you.
Everybody involved.
Yeah, I think, you know, two Brooklyn kids, right, that kind of grew up finding a passion for the deen, figuring out how to serve Allah Azza wa Jal through the various opportunities. I think we're very blessed. Opportunities we're giving to serve the deen in a very unique way. I think that began, when we were really curious, start studying and diving into understanding your faith in a different way, going to the masjid, masjid hopping, seminars, halaqat, mentors, right? You just start to immerse yourself as much as you can, particularly college years and then post-college years in enriching yourself and understanding your deen, your identity, your faith, connecting to Allah Azza wa Jal. And then naturally where that comes is like, hey, I absorb all this and I have to reciprocate it some way. And I want to give back and I want to, influence and change and bring progress. I think that was kind of through college and then post-college. Just found that passion. Mass Youth Center, as you mentioned, found a very, very passion in giving back. I think the first time I ever volunteered was summer camp. I was 16 years old, watching young kids in the center, taking care of them. And I was like, hey, this is fun. This is exciting. Good friends that we know, Tahir and others, hey, you connect with kids you see as yourself. And it's like, hey, these are my children. These are my brothers. And how do I, continue to serve them? I think from there, just really quickly, I think very quickly when you're a young, ambitious person in the masjid, they're going to drag you, or in the center, they're going to drag you into every nook and cranny, right? You're going to be on a board. You're going to be a volunteer. You're going to be at this committee, that committee, do this, do that, do Jum'ah, talk here, right? So naturally you get grabbed into all the things. And I think when you're young and zealous and you're trying to learn, you're trying to teach, you dive into everything. So I think I ran the gamut of being a volunteer, working part-time for a center, hopping to different places, particularly across the city, then being on boards and seeing some of the functionality and dysfunctionality. Then be like, oh, I'm going to start working with some national organizations at a national level. I'm going to start to connect with different leaders, different institutes. And all of a sudden, subhanAllah, your journey in Muslim community leadership is very broad, very vast. And I think there's a lot of experiences, a lot of challenges, being full-time for a long time. I think you understand the nitty-gritty, the hard, the tough days, and the days where, you really see somebody's life change, or somebody accepts the faith, or, you really see a young person evolve in front of your eyes and flourish. There's moments, subhanAllah, that are very, Allah kind of rewards us with that gratification of seeing
Keep
the fruits
going.
Of your labor.
A little bit of this.
We need that constant energy, because community work, honestly, it's the most difficult work, in my opinion. I mean, I think there's generally like there's a like a macro level. You have like you have your for-profit sector where people, you know, you go to work, you work business, whatever it is, and people go into that sector. Then you have your government sector. And obviously, government usually takes in a lot of things that we're not used to. So, you know, your lights, your this, your that, your streets, your schools, right? The government sector takes care of that. And at least in a capitalist society, then the for-profit sector covers a lot of what government isn't, because somebody's going to try to make money over things that nobody else is doing.
Private ventures, unique.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then really where nonprofit fits is all the rest.
Right.
What the government really doesn't want to do and what nobody's making money from doing, hence the term nonprofit.
By definition. Not profitable.
Yeah. So at a very macro level, if you think about it, where do we fit? Like, oh yeah, who's going to teach my kid Quran? Who's going to lead Friday services? Who's going to do a Sunday school? Yeah, that's going to be no government institution, you know, hopefully, is going to come and, yeah, you know, do it. I mean,
of course, we're talking about like
overrun by the government, the overreach of government, yeah, right? And then, sure, there's a more of a for-profit, particularly nowadays, like, hey, the capitalist Muslim ventures.
How can I monetize this?
Yeah, I want to be able to control everything here and I want to do this and serve the Muslim community. That's grown a lot too.
Yeah.
But still, the community heavily relies on,
for sure,
where masjids fit,
so
where
centers fit. So there's something you mentioned here that I do want to double-click on, which is the fact that you had your personal passion of serving this deen and your professional life dovetail before a lot of your higher-level training.
Mm.
Meaning you were involved serving, directing, leading before you got to Harvard, before sort of you're collecting, sure, some of the data you were collecting in the very recent past. And so what, because, you know, those, we are impatient creatures, as you just said. We, sure, need a little bit of like, keep going, here's a fruit.
Yeah.
That actually can have a opposite reaction of getting us complacent. Like, hey, things are going fine. We've had a few shahadas. Yeah, who hasn't had a few shahadas,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so what made you feel this sense of need that, no, we need to now refine our skill sets further?
Yeah.
Because you're already a professional per se.
Yeah.
In your passion that's already locked in. What made you go back to learn? What made you sort of be involved in something more systematic, infrastructurally speaking, to do better? Where would it come from that, you know, the episode is revolving around, whether we agree or disagree on the name, Masjid Mayhem, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something there,
sure,
that you can benefit us with sharing.
Yeah, great question. And I think, I hope, inshallah, may Allah accept, I think I've been trying to be very intentional of everything I've been trying to do. Very early on, obviously, once you get immersed in community work and you are like a CEO of, like, you're doing everything. Everything from picking up garbage, serving food, to like, I'm giving Jum'ah, to like, hey, I'm doing a strategic plan for this team. Like, you're involved in everything. And I think having great mentors, having great people around you is really important. You have to have like a good infrastructure of really good you know, people that are able to teach you, mentor you, coach you, you know, very much direct you. And I think I really had that in mass circles. Like, it, like, you got a sense of like, wow, this is there's a nuance to organizational growth. I think where that took me naturally, and this was after a long time of exploring, is first from personal experiences. I saw there was the ultimate correlator of success of a committee, a camp, a center, a region, a masjid, anything. To me, the ultimate correlator was, look, it's the people in that institution, and particularly it's the leaders in that institution. And I used to immerse myself, obviously, in a lot of religious leadership stories from the Prophet ﷺ and afterwards, but also like John Maxwell books and Franklin Covey books. And really, I saw like, hey, if you have good leadership, you have success in whatever that endeavor is. So leadership to me was like the number one correlator. So, hey, tell me about a good community, I guarantee you they have good leadership. Tell me about a great masjid, I guarantee you it's not. And when leadership is, you know, I love the saying of the Prophet, right? That to translate it really quickly, he's like, hey, people are like camels, and it's really difficult to find the one that treads the entire path of the desert. But that rahila, the one that's able to carry you across, that's the gem, in the diamond in the rough, if you will. I think that's what leadership is to me. Like, so hey,
finding and forging these types of people, producing them.
And it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality, right? It's not about having a lot of people, you know, it's not like, it's about having a few really good leaders that are able to tread the path forward for a, let's just talk right now, like an organizational level. Like, they're able to build a good culture, create a good plan, mobilize people together. People feel energized. There's a direction. Like, those are all leadership things.
Yeah.
So I think I was like, oh, I want to immerse myself in that. I want to be able to first know how to change people. So I think behavioral change became, like, really important to me, the psychology of, like, human development and behavior. But then, interestingly, there's a lot of correlations to how organizations change. And I love that. That piece. And so hence the org psychology kind of came into, like, hey, I really love this. I love the concepts of how do we get people to make these transformations? How do we get institutions to make the transformations?
So I think managing that people the right way to get them. So where do you see, forget the shortfalls. How do you see the ideals that by contrast we will be able to introspect, be self-critical, and say, do we have this or not? What are the best practices,
for leaders,
values,
to
manage the leaders you hire, or if you're not at that stage yet, you are that leader de facto?
Sure. Let's talk about how to become a leader. Let's talk about, like, okay, so what does it mean? And now here I preface this because I'm a student of the space. I'm not an expert in any way, but I think leadership. There's a very corporate culture to leadership. Because obviously in organizations and, you know,
took it out of my mouth. That was my next question.
There's a huge corporate cuff court because look, naturally, remember, if you can make money off of something in this country, like, people are going to do it. So naturally you have, like, your manager trainings and, you know, like, you know, your leadership development in the corporate space, which is really good and important, a lot to learn from there. And I'm in that space. Like, I understand that space. Then you have, like, governmental leadership, which is a different ballgame altogether, too. Like, okay, how do I speak to the masses, and how do I pitch, and how, you know, PR. So that's a different ballgame altogether, too. That's why I talk about the macro. I think community leadership or nonprofit leadership is very unique. And I think some gurus actually say, look, your best leaders are a nonprofit because the sacrifice is the highest without the benefits.
The material immediate return.
Yeah. So in a government, I'm going to get some kind of power, or in a for-profit, I'm going to get some kind of money. There's, like, an incentive that's there for the most part, which is fine, again, too, with ethical considerations. But the community sector, I want to be a leader in a masjid, or I want to have influence in the Muslim community. No, there's a different standard in both. Like, that's a path we have to tread and create. Like, what is the standard there? How do we develop leaders there? So that's been
a completely different value system that needs to drive it.
100%, particularly with the Muslim Islamic values, right? Like, what we understand in terms of the simple things.
Sincerity.
Like, yeah, sincerity.
Servant leadership.
Yeah, fame. Is it good or bad?
Right.
Influence. What does that mean? How do I, what is power in the Muslim? What is the power in a community? How does authority work? Where does it come from? There are many nuanced conversations that nobody's having, right? And we have, and naturally you have this, I think, take a step back. Like, our community is really young. Like, our parents came and they were just laying the groundwork of the institutions. The masjids are, you know, they started a few hundred, now they're a few thousand in our lifetime, probably tens of thousands in our children's lifetime, maybe hundreds of thousands, right? So the growth is going to happen. But then it's not just the infrastructure that's the problem. It's the people capacity that we're going to worry about.
Right.
Like, how do we make sure? I think most masjids care about people just coming to the masjid. I care about what leadership will be in the masjid, because that'll actually dictate if people come or not.
Right.
Do we have the right leadership? Do we have the right influence from religious leadership to executive operational leadership? Like, is that ready to meet the needs that our community will
be? And I always tell people, and I shared this with a previous guest, that I try to shake people out of measuring their success as a community by Jummah. Like, hey, listen, Jummah is mandatory, even if you can't stand your guts,
Man
on the altar, right? That's 100%. Not the metric. And so how do you actually get people here? Let's be honest.
Outside of Jummah and Ramadan is how I will measure your impact as a community.
Because so how do you become
those
that
are
leader?
Gonna be, those are going to be the ones where people, by default, Allah is just wired in our DNA. As believers, the DNA of a believer, like you're going to come. Those are places that the house of Allah are going to be filled. It's all the other times that you really like, that's maybe a metric, if you will, of like, okay, how successful is your community?
So leadership itself, how to build out that leader. The value system is important.
Yeah.
What else can we share about the differences? Because I've seen, of course, the unprofessional mayhem is one thing.
Yep.
The other side of it is maybe not noticing the difference, the necessary difference between sort of corporate leadership and between nonprofit servant leadership.
Yes.
So how else do we mitigate this?
Appreciate you bringing us back. So go back to what I was saying. What makes a successful community leader? I think it's really three critical things.
Bismillah.
And a lot of things stem from them, for sure. I think first and foremost, you have to have a strong ability to connect to people. Leadership is all about people. People change people. I really believe that.
Relationship. Integrity.
So your ability to connect to people. You want to talk about it in how to influence, how to manage, how to delegate, how to communicate, how to be emotionally intelligent. Like everything that you can imagine leadership would fall under connections, but you got to be able to connect to people well, right? Like there has to be, leadership is about driving people forward. It's about influencing people. So if you can't click with people, then you can be a leader of a different type, but not with the that communal leader that we're aspiring to.
Right. So I think interrupting your list, it's important, maybe even just to reset people. That was actually one of my biggest regrets. We're gonna have many more of them, but I realized the management struggles in religious institutions. So I went down the rabbit hole. Just, I'm not sort of trained at all. I'm a pseudo and an amateur by every measure of the word. I really am. But I was so sold on, management.
Yeah.
And so much of the literature out there and the training out there is corporate. And I didn't realize until years later that it's actually, at best in my head right now, 40% of the job.
Sure.
The personality of a leader.
Sure.
The relationship building acumen.
For sure.
The ability to forbear and absorb and win over and bring the best out of people and all of that.
Yep.
And sort of reset when things hit the fan and get past the bottleneck without, amputating anything. And that is like 60% at least.
Love it. Yeah. The Prophet said, I'm emphasizing the concept of manners. Like, we're talking about manners, right? And how the deen came to spread manners. And that's really very, very important. But I think leaders don't realize they have another standard that they have to live up to. Like there's everybody has to have good manners, but then there's a leader's manners, or their ethical standards have to be much higher. So, and I think we see that throughout littered in our history, like from the seerah through the great leaders of the past, of course, the ones that, and we know in the books, like who are the ones that are great and who are the ones that are not.
Right.
But the ability to connect and influence and people willing to follow you, by the way, for even without the ethics, those are leaders. Like, you can have bad leaders, bad ethics, bad morals, but they're
able to move. The
exactly.
Right.
You're able, Hitler and so many others, right? Like, so there's actually no consideration of the ethics. If you can connect people and mobilize people, that's why it's good or bad. It's a double-edged sword. Yeah, that's I think, the pillar of leadership, right? Now, again, we're talking about from a communal or a Muslim consideration. We'll definitely want to consider, like, with the ethics of Islam.
Of course. Okay.
I think that the second really important driver of community leadership, in my opinion, is your ability to drive results and get what we would say get wins. Like, what are the results that you're looking like? Okay, is leadership just somebody that's socially cool, or they're able to get things done, make an impact,
cover
make
ground,
the change? Yeah. Lead us. What does it mean to lead us? Everybody thinks, well, they're going to tread the path and we're going to follow them, but where's the path going? Where are we trying to do? So I think this is
that's vision, right? Is that another way to say it?
I think a lot of things fall under that. Or the ability efficacy. To create vision. Okay. I think the ability to create vision. I think the ability to create small wins out of a vision.
Okay.
What do you mean? Okay, we can have a vision. Love the
get distracted
fluffy
by
big picture stuff. That's great. What does that mean every day to us? Mm. How do we build for that every week, every month, every... What does that look like? You got to be able to not just give me the vision. You got to tread the path for me. You got to also tell me, hey, we're hitting the milestones that we want to. Like, are you, like, in a if you're in a community after a year, is there progress? How do you measure progress?
Can't be after the fact.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and maybe we'll get more, I'll get more kind of more practical because I think this ties to the masajid today. But I think a lot of youth, I've been in the role, boards, directors, imams. How do we measure their success?
Mm.
The only way is that the leaders or leaders, they create the plan for success and they benchmark themselves against it. So I've got to, it's almost like, look, I always say community work is like being a CEO. You've got to know how to do everything. The hardest part is how do I create the path forward for my youth department, my masjid. What do we want to do? What are the goals that we're trying to hit? And how do we make sure to deploy the right strategies and means to actually get them done?
I'm hearing Qawiyun Amin right there, right?
Sure,
the Quranic,
sure.
Leadership duet, you know, the best person to employ. She said to her dad, referring to Musa alayhi salam, is al-Qawi, the competent.
Yes.
Al-Amin,
yes.
The person of integrity, trustworthy,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So integrity and efficacy or competence.
Competence.
And I remember Umar radiallahu anhu also, he would complain to Allah that he couldn't find someone to relieve him of his position. He wished he could find, but in front of Allah he couldn't find. And of course, someone can lie to themselves and sort of say this out of conceit, but he was saying this in the depths of, you know, in the whispers of his sujood, he would say, oh Allah, I complain to you of the weakness of the person of integrity and the durability of the person of mischief, right? So like, I can't find the guy who's going to have those two qualities. And we, of course, complain to Allah of ourselves to be more competent and have better integrity.
I mean, I'm
not projecting anything or throwing shade anywhere.
Of course.
But we all got to just keep each other accountable.
I want to say this because this is a little tie into some of the mayhem. You can get tricked with one or the other in community leadership, in from a board level, imam level, across in the masjid space. Sometimes you have somebody who's really competent, not able to connect well.
Mm.
And sometimes you have people that are really good connectors. They're great social ambassadors, but they're not competent.
Mm.
So you will eventually find that now you can fix both. Like, we're not saying these are immovable traits. No, there's a personal investment. Let's talk about individual leaders that you have to put into that. Like, I got to improve my planning skills. I can't get around that. I've got to be able to improve my ability to measure impact of someone I'm teaching for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have to be able to be better at that and show competence, to your point, right? I think a lot of times...
But we should be open to the fact that we sometimes need to also splice our personal journeys from our community's journeys. Because
sure.
I need to
sure.
do better,
yep.
But what if there's someone who can do better now
with
while
me.
I'm working on
yes.
being better later
yeah.
in the long term?
Yeah.
Like, and sometimes it's even perpetual. Yani when the Prophet ﷺ said to Abu Dharr, Ya Abu Dharr, isn't Sahih Muslim, Inni araka da'ifan, I see that you're weak. And Abu Dharr was anything but weak. The
sure.
weakness here was a weakness of discretion.
Sure.
He was too passionate
yep.
about sort of social justice. That's
yes.
what Al-Dhahabi said, actually, rahimahullah.
Sure.
He said, I see that you're weak. You have a weakness, a particular weakness, right? And I love for you what I love for me. Like, do yourself a favor because I don't want to see you hurt in front of Allah, right? I love for you what I love for me. So do not, فَلَا تَأَمَّرَنَّ عَلَى اثْنَيْنِ وَلَا تَوَلَّيَنَّ مَلَى اتِيمٍ. Don't accept to be a leader over any two people.
Yep.
And do not accept responsibility for the wealth of any orphans.
Yes.
And that we can sort of analyze that and unpack it later about
sure.
why those two particular things. But being able to tell yourself that, hey, wait, I need to do better. And so long as I'm stuck here, I'm going to try to do better, right?
Yep.
But at the same time, if I can find someone... I'm not going to make the community wait for me, right?
Yeah,
like, if I can have someone right now that can lead the salah with better tajweed,
yes.
I should not hesitate in saying,
beautifully
you
said.
Must lead, not me.
Yeah, beautifully said. I think, so go back to your point. I love that. The prophetic model on situational leadership is tremendous. Mm-hmm. Prophet Sallam was able to really quickly understand what situations leaders, like, I have to put a leader in this position. And those are, they break some of the myths that we have of what we want leaders to be. And again, we've got to be, you know, kind of pivoting off the, like, personal leadership journey. Like, understanding how you fit into the community, and community leaders understanding how people fit in, very important. The Prophet, you know, how does Usama bin Zayd at a very young age, I mean, we're talking about 60, 17, 18 years old, whatever the age might have been. How is he the general of an army going up against the Romans? Like, what with the likes of Abu Bakr and Umar in it, and Umar was loud and vocal against it. So why?
It's inspirational in the abstract, but how do you actually not misuse that anecdote?
Yeah, exactly. So why was he there? Why was Khalid bin Walid, you know, radiallahu anhu, you know, he becomes Muslim after, I mean, we're talking about, he was essentially an enemy of the Prophet for nearly 20 years. Khalid, people don't know, became Muslim very end of his life.
Right before Fatah Mecca.
Yeah, right. Last 2 years of the Prophet's life. Mm. So for 20 years, he had been an enemy of the Prophet. He accepts Islam, radiallahu anhu. And immediately the Prophet, like within a few months, he's leading armies. And
right.
He was never dispatched. Even though he had made some grievous mistakes. He had made some grave mistakes. The reality is, look, the Prophet understands there are situations where people used to excel. And of course, the famous one with Khalid, relatively famous story, that he would have trouble reading Qul Ya Ayyuhal Kafirun, Salah, leading the army. But he had just, you know, like, what institution today, think about it, like, from our perspective, what institution would make an executive director of a masjid an 18-year-old kid? Or what institution would allow a convert, after 5 months, they barely maybe know how to pray, but they're on the board?
We're not saying do it.
We're saying why
categorically reject it.
Exactly. Mm. It's like, hey, what did the Prophet understand?
Justify.
No, he understood, look, competence in a situation, it oversees certain what we would call disqualifiers. Like, he doesn't need to know how to recite the Quran to help us organize the management, the governance structure of our board. It's like it's a different paradigm. Again, I think what I was trying to say, the third state too, and I think it's really important. I don't want to neglect it. So competence and connection, we're agreeing, like, these are really important, particularly what kind of leader you're trying to be. I think the last one, and we sometimes there's this weird balance with this one. We are too loose on it or too strict on it, which is what I believe, like, the ethical aspects of being a leader, the state of the leader, the values of the leader, who the leader is within themselves. That is accountable to Allah Azza wa Jalla first and foremost. So that's
right.
the amongst the first people that are punished by Allah Azza wa Jalla is a leader that transgresses because the insincerity was there. Right? Several examples, right. The imam and the scholar that's, you know, just the nuance being, look, your faith, your values, your ethics as a leader, that the internal, you know, what's kind of called in the corpus of the leadership psychology, very popular kind of space now.
Terminology now. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, hey, this is what's happening within the leader.
And how much of that actually is consequential?
Yeah, consequential from what?
So I'll give you just, because this is new to me, and I don't know how to process it even. Some organizations I know will require of you to not purchase a house on an interest-bearing loan, for instance, right?
Sure.
For their membership.
For their members, wow.
Right? What are we measuring? Like, what is consequential in your eyes versus what is sort of, this is a personal issue or...
Yeah.
this is a juristically controversial issue? Yeah. What are we looking at?
I think first and foremost, I think there's a lot of work that needs to happen to unpack that, okay. this concept. I'm an amateur. Mm. I'm a student. I'm trying to learn. And I think there's so much in the depth of the Islamic sciences and history and fiqh that still needs to be unpacked for our community. Because the reality is the Muslim community has never dealt with this paradigm of management that we're in.
Right.
Managing ourselves as institutions. Like, that's not a paradigm that our parents know. Our grandparents don't know. There's no muscle memory to how to manage a masjid or a community.
Right, right.
So it's
the government and the nonprofit, as we call it today, nonprofit.
Exactly.
There was a merger.
Exactly.
And it was a sort of a healthy cycle.
Exactly.
Alqaf, the endowments were funding, enabling us. That's
true. And to be able to manage without government intervention institutions,
yeah,
it's a tough reality. There's no Muslim, there's no backbone, there's no
precedent.
Nothing we can lean on. So hence there's a lot of paving the way. I think from the Islamic sciences, but also the management sciences. But let's go back to your point, because I loved it. Let's just talk about the most standard position of leadership is the imam. I've never been an imam. You're the default, at least in this conversation, expert on imamship. What are the ethical standards that we have to judge an imam by? I don't think there's no book or manual for that, right? It's right now.
I'm calling for one, actually.
It's in my
WhatsApp groups,
yeah,
where I try.
Exactly. Because you have, like, okay, we have, let's just say, 5,000 masjids across the country. the first and foremost leader of each of those places, or like the natural who we're going to hire as a community, we need to bring an imam. So you have 5,000 open jobs for imam, and these are, I don't want to belittle, the role of imam is tremendous. It's the community builder. It's not just you come and you lead salah and you read and you leave. It's no, I'm here to build this community. I'm the linchpin.
Inform their,
if you will,
lifestyle.
Exactly.
Yeah. Face of the community.
We have no manuals. We have, going back to the mayhem, like well, what's the book?
So
on
you
that?
Consider that. I actually wanted to ask you a whole lot of questions about root causes. But let's start with religious leadership. Would you consider that one of at least the greatest root causes,
yeah,
for turbulence, mayhem,
yeah,
on the religious leadership level? There's no standard
I think
that can be identified?
Yeah, great question. I think principally there's three root causes.
Okay.
One of them is the leadership.
Mm.
Now, let's start with leadership. I think first and foremost, love the quote of John Maxwell, everything rises and falls on leadership.
Mm.
Right? So if we fix leadership, we will fix a lot of the challenges that we're having. What does that mean? Well, first and foremost, I need a community that elects people that know how to lead and manage an institution. So there has to be this embracement of not just, look, I think in the nonprofits, you generally get people that are the financiers of the institutions.
Patrons.
Or they're the servants, like they're the most dedicated volunteer, and which is great. But then you have to be able to mix in some level of expertise of leadership management into that.
Hmm.
Like, who understands how do we operationalize this? Now, you can get that from outside. I'm fine with that. Or maybe we need to create more of those. But like that leadership culture is really important. Before I choose who is, eventually that community is going to choose, like, who's the leader that we want to bring in?
Hmm.
What does that mean? Like, what kind of community do we want? What do we believe is the most important thing in the community that we're in? Like, what's most important?
What are the primary objectives?
Institution? Like,
yeah.
And I know it's probably because communities go from a little musalla to this massive building. It's hard to project that far. SubhanAllah, you know, the growth of community. But it's like, hey, like, at this current state for the foreseeable future, like, hey, if we have 300 families around, we need somebody that can connect to families. If we have a blue collar, in and out community,
transient,
right? If it's a college town, like, you've got to understand your realities pretty well to be able to decide that, right? I can't just plop somebody in and, like, for lack of a better term, like, I'm just going to import somebody, whether from overseas or from somewhere else, and they're just going to fit in here. Like, I've got to figure out, like, what kind of community we want. What are we trying to do?
Hmm.
What's the size? What's the ethical considerations? It might be tough to say, but diverse communities, I want a kind of a diverse religious leadership. Whereas a lot
within
of times,
boundaries. I know you mean that, but I want to make sure the audience does as well.
Within boundaries, of course, within boundaries. But like, I think let's talk about a few realities. Like the suburb realities are very diverse in nature. And I think do we lean on one ethnicity so the other one is sidelined? Or if there's like two or three major, how do you choose an imam based on the ethnicity? Do we just go with someone that's not there? Or, you know, like there's all these considerations that happen. And I think that simply those are, again, new realities, new challenges. I don't know how to answer those. But
you know, if I may, that was one of the... It's just easier for me to point out where I've been wrong than the places where I feel like, alhamdulillah, we've made some strides. But in this community, one thing that I was very keen on and to notice, and I did, was that when we hired a staff member that was African-American, Sheikh Ibrahim Jaber, and he started getting into the rotation of the khutbah, and he's a very competent khatib. This was not tokenizing or anything. It was very obvious, and I wasn't expecting it. It just, you couldn't not notice it. It was impossible. African-Americans started showing up in greater numbers in our Jumu'ah.
Yeah.
And for me, I was like, wow, we're sitting here harping on, you know, the fact that we need someone who speaks good English, and here I am, American-born khatib, so I speak good English. But no, it was representation that mattered to them.
Exactly.
Not just sort of the language dimension. So it was humbling for me to realize that. Look, like, you think you got it figured out, but there are elements here you got to sit there and say, you know, am I just confirming my biases? Am I really open to realizing what my community needs right now?
Yeah.
Like, for example, a diversity in leadership to feel validated and represented.
Yeah, Zakul Khair, I beautifully said, I think, SubhanAllah, when I was very young in the masjid management space, I remember like the youth center, we were very intentional as a team. You know, there's your preset khatibs, they're there. You know, we've defined them. Again, speaking to this reality, like, we did surveys of our jumas. Like, we actually audited our jumas for several months.
Wow.
Asking the congregants what they're looking for, topics that they're looking for, their demographics. Or, like, we did
so an analysis. So it's not just anecdotal. Yeah. Right.
And then when you realize, okay, look, and we made a hard shift, and I remember Akhi Muhammad Mathir and I were, like, trying to spearhead. We were shifting from an Arabic, a long time Arabic khutbah, to shift it completely English. Like that in the inner city, maybe you know suburbs, they hear like
find this incoherent. Like, yeah,
like, but in the inner city, there's
it's not a no brainer. It's not a no brainer.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right.
Till today, there's communities 40 years old. It's only one language, right?
Correct.
And the reality is, the disenfranchisement of a younger generation. Because of just persisting in that. But anyway, we were very insisting, like, hey, we're going to bring, we have our presets, but you're going to bring different ethnicities, different caliber of leader of khatibs, scholars.
Different ages, different ages, ethnicities, different
exactly,
calibers.
Different communities. Mm. Like, it's a great, actually is a phenomenal community networking opportunity that I'm sure you do that here, I know, and other places. Like, you bring imams from different areas to give, you know, the ability to connect with different communities. I absolutely love that. But again,
so root causes, you're saying, if I'm not going to be interrupting a major thought here, is not identifying the objective enough, and based on that, we're going to just be random, really, arbitrary,
exactly.
Not realizing it.
Exactly, yeah. Understanding really well, exactly, your community, I think, making thorough, thoughtful decisions. Let's just say, like, the thoughtful decisions that are required is really, really important to resolving the mayhem. Understanding your congregants, understanding your community, your reality. I think that's really important.
So there is something that I'm sure is on different people's minds. It's definitely on mine as well, which is not just the age groups, the ethnicities of the community, the location, the demographic, but the size that you referred to and the phase, right?
Yeah.
I'll never forget, and I was very grateful, Islamic Relief, they had once sponsored a nonprofit summit where they brought in experts in management, in fund development, and in legalities.
Sure.
And legal council that were responsible, a lot of them, for the building and evolution and stabilization of some of the mega churches in the South, even. So, I mean, they got a lot under their belt, a lot of credit, street cred. And so one of the things that they did with us, all Muslim leaders, you know, nascent Muslim communities trying to, like, figure out our way, is that they explained to us what governance models are, right? So they said, this is called the advisory board model. This is called the team management model. Yes. This one is called the cooperative model. Yes. This one is called the patron model. Yeah. And they explained to us what each of that is. That's where the board is everything.
Yeah.
And this is where they hire someone and they offload almost everything.
Yes.
And this is where it's an honorary seat and they use them to sort of finance and network to other financiers to sort of sustain the place.
Yeah.
And then after they told us all of this, they said, they made us vote on what's the best model.
Mm.
And we're all voting and, you know, so sure of ourselves. And, like, after all this, the guy smiles and it was a trick question.
Yeah, sure.
He says, the biggest problem in infrastructure in the nonprofit world is when you don't recognize when you need which of these.
Exactly.
If you ever get stuck in that fixed mindset, if you ever sign out of the growth mindset. Because some, you know, we spoke about in the previous episode, many communities who are saying, no, we're not at the stage yet where we can afford to hire an imam.
Yep.
And I'm always arguing that you need to hire an imam so you can grow.
Sure.
Some communities will move past that they've hired one or two or three people and then get very sort of skeptical or uneasy about moving a bit further. Like, should I continue building and they will come, or are they done coming?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I started seeing it unfold in front of me and I said, wow, this is a very delicate conversation.
Yes.
But at the very least, at the fundamental model, like, being practical, I'm sure you've seen tons of success and horror stories, Akhi, more than me. What do you advise, like, the small masjid, the medium masjid, the big masjid?
Great question. So, great set of questions. I'll start with...
yeah, I unloaded. I'm sorry.
No. I'll start with the main takeaway from the story, beautiful story, is, like, look, your realities change. You've got to be adjustable with... You need an unimaginable amount of flexibility and agility in nonprofit work. You've got to be understand, like, the phases that you go through. So let's start with the smallest phase, like you're the startup masjid or the small masjid, or for whatever reason, maybe you've been around for a long time and you're just that small masjid. I think generally at that level, you're right. Your board is going to needs to play a bigger role in supporting the infrastructure and the build of the masjid. We would say, and I think, we have a number of workshops that kind of dive into each of these phases. But, like, let's say, number one, you want to be able to define your roadmap for the next few years, right? So you have to have clarity on, like, hey, we got to get together. We just got elected. We're a new board. What do we want to, again, go back to? What's the metric of success that we want to do? What are we trying to do? All right, we want to increase our funds by X. We want to hire an imam. Maybe we need an imam and another two imams or whatever it might be. We need to increase the capacity of our Quran school, our Sunday school. Like, you've got to be able to sit down and define really quickly. You can't keep operating the same way. You've got to define a path forward. That's, I think, the first thing.
Kicking the ball down the road, moving the goalposts.
Exactly.
Is a killer, for sure.
Second thing is, like, look, hey, we're going to manage the masjid more closely and as a smaller institution. Like, the board has to play a bigger role. And it's got to really be good at elevating volunteers around it. Like, you've got to be able to lean on volunteers, usually a small subset of volunteers, and you've got to be able to lean on them. They complement your imam, hopefully, and some of the other activities that you're doing, but you're going to lean on volunteers to build programming. Again, I think we're trying to build, at Oak Tree, we're trying to do this model of, like, what does this growth look like? At each level, what are you supposed to be doing? But there's, like, you know, the knowledge track. It's like, hey, we want one family night. Okay, we have a khutbas, of course. Like, maybe we add a family night to the knowledge track.
Mm.
Maybe our programs track across audiences. Hey, maybe we add one youth program. We add one pre-teens program. We add one kids program. Like, you've got to have, again, build those metrics. So as a smaller institution, you're going to take on bigger roles. I think the complexity is, okay, now what about a medium institution? What are they supposed to do? Yeah, they have to start, this is the hard part, empowering people. And by empowering, we mean either hiring or start more and more defaulting to, like, hey, we're going to bring in an imam and a religious director. And we're going to bring in a youth director. We're going to bring in a facility manager. We're going to, like, you're at that size where you as a board cannot, you can maybe manage a few functions of, like, programs. Hopefully still the strategy is still there. But you're going to start to offload more and more. And then I think at the from a capacity perspective, I think at the highest level, the biggest, what we call mega masjids, or the biggest institutions, they're in the crisis right now of the reality of there's two big tracks of leadership they need to think about.
They need to get harmonized.
Yeah. One is the religious leadership track. Hmm. So we need a team of religious leaders, not one person.
Right.
We need a resident scholar, an imam, assistant imams. You know, you need a religious leadership team.
Right.
And then some people are really successful at this one. But then you need an executive or operations leadership team.
Hmm.
You need an executive director. The imam can't be going to the media for PR and doing the interfaith banquet and going to each donor's. You can't only lean on your religious leadership.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of executive things, programs, services, activities, facilities.
They need dedicated staff.
They need dedicated staff. So
independent.
Exactly. Staff, so really sure. The complement is trying to run across both tracks. That's more hard. It's difficult. I think, again, we can help pave the way forward, but you need a pronged approach for your leadership capacity.
So let's say someone recognizes this, they have the growth mindset, they're decent at identifying what phase they're in. Where do you find these good intentions and plans in principle underway? Do they run into unforeseen obstacles, major obstacles towards this?
Tell me, define what do you mean by major obstacles?
Identifying the right leadership is one example that may come to my head if you were to ask me that question.
So identifying right leadership.
There are communities that wait on a religious leader for 5-10 years.
Yes.
Perhaps they could have built one by then.
Sure. Yes. So great point. So I can go in many ways. I don't know.
Take your time. We have about basically 15 minutes or so on the hour. 15 minutes.
Okay.
Right?
So
15 hour, and we only have one or two questions left.
And I want to be mindful. We're going to do the superstar thing.
Exactly.
Right?
So you don't have to give too much here.
Okay.
And we'll always overlap between episodes.
Yeah, that's fine. So let's go with the obstacles. Okay. Hmm. How do we overcome obstacles? Well, number one, what is the obstacle? If it's a resource thing, you've got to really attack that. If we're talking financial resources, yep, you got to get creative as a masjid. I think we're trying to help in that space too. Like, hey, if we're a masjid and our community's not able to sustain us, so how can, if I'm going to bring somebody on, I need a year's worth of that funding ready before we bring that person on, ideally. I'll tell you about this horror stories. But like, hey, we've thought like we need an X amount of fund to bring somebody in. We're going to just work on that fund for a year or two. But once we trigger that fund, it doesn't go to like a, well, let's just expand the building. No, we've committed to
the empire.
Yeah, let's just renovate the bathroom. No.
Right.
Let's if we want to invest in people, we've got to be thoughtful and planning about it and allocate the resources to it. Again, being more creative.
So
if it's a financial obstacle,
got it.
Right? So dedicate the time and resources to it. Now, let me speak about this. Too many big and small institutions do the travesty of bringing somebody on. They can't even pay their paycheck for more past 3 months. I mean, I know people personally that have worked for institutions and been back paid for 4 or 5 months in a row. That's absolutely unacceptable. Like,
no doubt about it.
There's no way.
The salary itself is above average.
Let alone the salary. But then you're like, oh, we just needed somebody and we'll back pay them. That's absolutely unacceptable. It should be, again, the thoughtfulness. It's like the planning, the strategy, the thoughtfulness of like, yeah, we want to bring on a new person. Okay, do we have what we need for this person for 6 months, a year to sustain them and their family? Like that's just that mere fact of doing that, it goes a long way.
Right.
It takes us 2 years, 3 years. Okay. That's okay. So financial obstacles. Let's go to the second obstacle. Like, hey, look, we have external forces that are hindering us. Like the community or...
We're in a small town.
Small town. Exactly. Like there's external force. If there's external forces, again, I think small and steady. Like it's okay to build to your point. I like that. Yeah, maybe we need 5 years, 10 years to find the right person. That's okay. Or to be where we want to be. I think the last one is the most difficult. I know you want me to get to that. Is what if the people dynamics in the institution are just chaotic. We have all the resources.
Before you get to that, let me just add that I've seen some very nice success stories of at least religious leadership, because that's my neck of the woods in these projects, where they say, you know, we do have a call to hire. It's been sitting there forever.
Yeah.
But we have actually sponsored a student to go to Darul Uloom, go to Medina.
Love that.
They've graduated Mishka.
Love it.
I know people who say, I remember this imam when he was a little kid. Love in our it. Community. Look at him now, man. Yeah. He's our pride and glory. And subhanAllah, you know, just like be ready to adapt, have a plan B.
100%.
Don't wait. We're already playing catch up. 100%. I think creativity, you hit it on the head.
Organic is really important. You can always import, but organic, I believe in the
look
organic
at Qalam.
Model. Yeah.
Qalam Seminary. Yeah. Yep. I'm being surprised, to be honest. Mashallah. Shout out to Qalam.
Yes.
Because I was not very close to Qalam. I know essentially who they are and what they do, and
sure.
I'm very happy and proud of them, and I'm hearing about growth. But now, on the receiving end, I'm traveling to Masajid, and it was sort of like a 3 in 3 months type thing where I'm a Qalam graduate.
Yeah.
The imam that Mashallah. I meet at a local masjid.
Yeah.
And that's just so inspirational for me.
And I did Qalam.
That's vision.
I did a year of Qalam. Sheikh Abnas is an outstanding leader. I think he's very thoughtful about what he's trying to do in like this community engine. We absolutely need an engine of someone that's pumping out religious leadership. Mm-hmm. Like it's got to be nonstop. Mm-hmm. And
no disrespect to anyone else
of
either.
Of course.
Noticed it. Like, yeah. Wow. No, I'm so happy to hear that.
And there's honestly other institutions too that they don't get into that community. The community taking on community leadership is tough, and you know that. So I love the piece. I think another mistake is just on that point.
Mm.
I think sometimes communities have a leader and they don't trust that leader to build leaders around them enough. They don't like, hey, we don't want you from the religious perspective. Mm. We love that you're teaching 15 classes, but we'd like to give you 3 young people that you can develop for us. Mm. Like, hey, tell me.
You think it's a trust issue? I personally don't.
I think it's a multifaceted issue.
No
I think,
way that comes
I think
from.
Yeah. Be honest, sometimes the leaders themselves don't want the competition.
Mm.
I think sometimes the leaders themselves, either they keep themselves too busy to build the next leader,
mm.
the succession plan.
Really? SubhanAllah.
Well,
that's a value
so.
Issue for sure. That's
sure.
tragedy.
I think that it's tough, and then we're going to get into
delicate. I mean, I believe
so,
it.
Delicate. Yeah.
We're human.
Yes. There's
keep
the
going.
Human. There's a human side of it. But I think like we should be, the takeaway should be invest more time and more folks around you. I love the, Muhammad Abbas, he's a great mentor of mine in the space. He used to tell us, look, when you're a leader, you find your replacement day one in nonprofit. Like who's going to replace you? Do you have that person? Is it clear to you? Because everybody's saying hello and goodbye. Assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum salam.
Like,
so, yeah, exactly. So make sure that you're day one prepping that person. I love that the concept.
Mindset.
So our religious leaders need that. But then, yes, you're right. Our institutions are not patient enough. Like, oh, we're going to send somebody to Qalam. Well, we got to wait 6 years. Like, are we willing to be patient when you can just kind of like do it quickly? So that there's the balancing act of it for sure.
What are other obstacles now?
Yeah, the people dynamics. So the obstacle of like, hey. We elect 12 people, 15 people, 70. I don't know how many of these boards get crazy. Like all these, you know, it's a revolving door, 2 years, 4 years. And we can never get the continuity and the synergy of a leadership team.
Because the reset button is always getting
There's
hit.
There's always, yeah, exactly. Hmm. So that is, the governance structure is another very big challenge. It's chaos because everybody does their own thing or replicates what Nextdoor is doing, essentially. So,
you know, a mentor of mine, and I'm not Republican or Democrat, but he said to me something very profound. He said, America is a great country because it was able to withstand Trump.
Sure.
Like everyone, if you remember, before Trump got into office, at least his detractors were going bonkers.
Sure.
You know? He's going to do this and he's threatening to do that and he's saying this. And then the conspiracy videos were actually getting a little bit more colorful in the prophecies they were prophesying. And then my mentor said to me, Muhammad, like America is not a masjid. America has the infrastructure and the checks and balances to withstand even someone as eccentric as Trump.
Yeah.
And look, he came. And he left, And yes, of course, there's a decline in every empire, but America's still America.
Sure, sure.
And I was blown away by that.
Yeah, the governmental apparatus didn't fall apart because someone came out of left field to take...
And started slapping his own allies.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah. It's a great... I think in a lot of trainings, so we talk a lot to boards. I was like, hey, if you guys all left and didn't come back, how much would be left here? Like, what's the ether? What's your effect after you're gone? Mm. And that is a lot of you got to operationalize things. You have to have a robust way. And this is tough too, because even us as leaders on the ground don't do that. We don't even write our own, like, we don't even have contracts, and we work just verbal agreements on the most important people that are hired by the institution. It's just all verbal. Or like, yeah, hey, how often, I think the lack of institutionalizing the institution is one of the key causes of the mayhem. Hmm. Nobody wants to spend time doing it.
And what about, I want your take on this, even though it's a can of worms, the concept of, so that's a little bit of like the free-for-all concept.
Sure.
Another shade of this, which is what some may call the like over-democratization of
it. Sure.
Where you hit these stagnation points because there's just too much.
Yeah. So much stagnation that one party will sue the other or will break off, right? Like you can
or
get
too many opinions, not or, enough or, sort of like decisive,
too
timely
many opinions.
Decision
yes,
making.
100%. Right. And look, I think I've been there. I've been in the board meetings where one person wants to talk about, you know, the balloon parade and one person wants to talk about the...
I really hope these aren't true stories.
One person
or else we're
going
to have to cut this video.
Hey, let's do a parade. One person was talking about, hey, let's, you know, the landscapers. And the one person was talking about, hey, why don't we invite, you know, Sheikh XYZ to our next youth conference that's, you know, some international star. You know, it's like it's all over. Right? There's absolutely, because there isn't a, subhanAllah, the checks and balances in institutions, actually, there should be, there's no... What does seniority mean in a masjid? Like, how do I get to the level of being at the top of, like, making really critical decisions? What's that journey like? If I'm a rich doctor that gives the most money, well, I'm just going to be on that board. Or right, if I'm a dedicated mom that serves, that I'm going to, if I'm a aspiring, good speaking 20-year-old guy that gives khutbas that are motivating, I'm going to be on the board. Like, how do you measure the progress, right? Like,
no, it's profound.
Typically,
by the way, I need to say, because I laughed so hard at the balloon thing, within religious leadership as well, we hear a very difficult,
of course,
sort of tensions that are because of how wide the spectrum can be on what is going to fix
the experience,
the ummah, or the local ummah. And so the priority 100%. Debate can't be open-ended. We have to get past decision paralysis, so we need some way to move this forward.
Exactly.
So I'm not sort of dogging on any sector that's not my own.
And here's the conundrum, and I think this is important for board members to hear this. A lot of times, board members might be sitting in the highest level of the... they're the safeguards, they're the custodians of the institution, but they're not the most important people in the institution. It's probably if it's a strong imam, it's probably the imam. If it's a strong leader, community leader, it's probably the leader. And so you've got to hopefully lean into them supporting you and helping you tread the path of priority. Again, it goes back to competence. Like if I'm a good imam, good meaning like I'm able to like steward my board. Like I've got to be able to lead up. Yep. Let's create a path forward. Let's be key on like what are the strategic objectives. Like just these simple terminologies are very important, or else we're always stuck in Palestine today and Bangladesh tomorrow. And somebody poor. Let's create a food pantry.
We're going to react
when
to
you're
these
going in every direction,
perpetual.
You're not going anywhere. I think the point I think for leaders is important to know. The saying is, effort does not mean effectiveness. Just because you're doing a lot doesn't mean you're doing a lot. So you've got to be able to understand clearly. Like, yeah, sure, there'll be moments where we can steer off, but look, I've been for. I give a specific example. I joined when I moved to Dallas. I was a youth director the first few years there, and it was hard for me to leave. You know, Brooklyn kid leaving for the first time. It's tough to leave family and nuances. If I didn't see unimaginable synergy with the leadership, like, hey, we believe in youth. We believe, like, we're not, we are built
that
like
was
a masjid,
common thread, yeah.
But we're all about the youth. And I said very clearly, hey, look, love it. Everything is about the youth. That means, okay, we're going to build a youth team. We're going to build youth work. Like, everything is going to be synergized around these young people, right? And that's, it's tough because when you break the door or there's a hole in the wall from the soccer ball or like the, you know, like, hey, are we really, like, are we going to shut everything down or do we really believe? No, that's our priority.
That's part of the
no
cost.
Matter what.
Yeah.
You have to have that commitment on, like, it's clear to us. The focus is youth. That means everything that comes with that is going to just happen. Same with community, families. Yeah. Like, hey, we're serving families. Okay, that means your space has got to be accommodating to moms with babies. Everybody fine with a baby crying during Isha or no? Everybody ready for that or well, like, what are we trying to do? I think leadership has got to set the tone and we've got to kind of mobilize around, to your point, what's the values and what's the priorities? And I think there's no way around that.
I'm actually happy that I don't have time to ask you the last question.
Sure.
On my mind, which is how do we overcome these obstacles in scale, right? And I think a better question to be asked, if you want to sort of speak to it in a minute's time, fine. But I think it's a perfect reason to tell people really what Oak Tree can offer them.
Sure.
Because there's probably going to need a customization about overcoming some of these obstacles.
Sure.
With the particularities of their projects, their institutions.
Sure. So I'm talking about Oak Tree kind of at its foundation because a lot of people don't know. So Oak Tree is a nonprofit that's been around for over 10 years.
Inshallah, yeah.
I think it started off, the vision of the initial founding board was, education around leadership. And then that really evolved throughout various phases. And until today, I think we really are, our focus is to support Muslim leaders within the nonprofit spaces. And I think that's a very, alhamdulillah, myself and our team, like we've been on the ground. Like we've been the frontline leaders in community work for a long time. And then we became kind of experts in different aspects of that leadership. And so what we're trying to do is really bring a tailored, customized solution to our community across these difficult problems. Like, what does a strategic plan mean for a masjid? How do you create a strategic plan? Like, what is the path forward? And what are all the stakeholders a part of that? And how do we actually synergize and align around it? We actually help orgs through that. Hey, how do we actually structure programs and activities? How do we scale that in a masjid? What are the different programs and activities we should be having? We help kind of train and I would say we kind of consult because we do a lot of, you know, discovery work with masajid and understanding what their budgets are and their volunteers and their leaders and their history. But I think we help tread the path forward for them.
Forgive me, how does that differ from consulting in my little head?
No, it is. We would say it's consulting. It is consulting work. But we're not a do it for you. Like a lot of times, hey, can you guys come and speak to our imam and performance manage him? Can you guys come and help us write our bylaw? Like we're not at the level, we don't have the capacity to do it. We really are just trying to train on best practices and the experiences that we were bringing from various other communities and ourselves.
Awesome, man.
Let's be honest too. People don't want to learn. Like I've personally been in this space for about 5 years, this kind of training and development for the Muslim community. It's a hard sell. People, we're not, maybe because of the reactionary nature of our organization, we're just so head down, focused on the next thing. But trying to train your volunteers, your staff. I mean, we've done some of the things. We do staff wide training on like customer service. Like, how does everybody from the imam to the janitor and all the volunteers, how do they think about serving their customers in a masjid setting?
Make it a pleasant experience.
Yeah, what does that mean? Yeah, exactly. And training on some of those things. And a lot of times it's them figuring it out. Them giving us scenarios that they've gone through and we pop it up and we tell them, hey, okay, how do you guys tackle this? You know, mom spilled, yelled at this, the middle of Ramadan, tarawih is going on. You know, we know the chaos. Like, hey, how are we coming together to solve this problem? And that's the stuff that I think our institution is just not investing enough in, the willingness to learn the best practices and to try to elevate their standards.
No, that's fantastic. May Allah reward you guys in ways that will continue to live on in the communities and in your offspring, inshallah, azza wa jal. Allahumma ameen. And I know, putting this podcast together, that this is not meant for scale. This is a very niche subject.
Yeah.
And so I do want anyone who's listening and interested to connect with the likes of Oaktree and benefit yourselves and invest in it. And, you know, let's professionalize. Let's be people of ihsanic Islamic work, right? Awesome. With excellence, inshallah, azza wa jal, the spirit of our deen. And may Allah help us. May Allah help us pass the baton the day that we pass it with our heads up high in front of Allah Azza wa Jal for the little bit that we did in our little corners of the world. Jazakallah khair, Brother Rami. I look forward to having you again on some future subjects, inshallah ta'ala.
My pleasure.
And to all our viewers, please do share this and leave your comments so that we know what needs to be addressed and we're not speaking in a silo. Subhanakallahumma hamdik, shadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.